You are listening to another exclusive podcast from Pituitary World News.
This is Dr. Lewis Blevins of Pituitary World News, podcasting to you this evening from Sausalito, California. Today I thought I would talk to you briefly about radiation-induced hypopituitarism.
Before we get to Dr. Blevins' discussion, I wanted to take a few minutes to mention a few important things. Thanks to the generous donations from our key supporters, we've been able to do our work since our launch in October 2014. Our readers have been growing steadily to an average of 8,000 per month. Many, around 50%, are first-time visitors. So we know we are reaching a lot of people with our content. But in the last 5 years, we've also learned that it really takes more than full time to manage the site, write the articles, research the content, record, edit, produce, and publish all the articles, podcasts, and videos you see. And we're constantly searching for new ways of reaching more people in the hope that this knowledge will lead to more interest in pituitary disease from the general public and therefore shorten the time it takes to proper diagnosis. So my pitch today is that if you enjoy what we're doing, please chip in and help us keep doing this work. We have a long list of initiatives we'd like to implement, initiatives that we know will make a difference to our effort. We work very efficiently, and we can do this with small amounts, but your support will really help. If you'd like to donate any amount, it's truly appreciated. Please go to pituitaryworldnews.org and click on the Get Involved button at the top of the front page to get to our donations page and just follow the simple instructions. Your donations are fully tax deductible. If you'd like to learn more about our list of initiatives and plans, please send us a note to info@pituitaryworldnews.com. or connect with us through our social media channels. Many of you have already helped, and we are very grateful. Thank you for your attention. Now, let's continue with this very informational podcast from Dr. Lewis Blevins.
Make some general non-specific comments and then talk about some experiences that I've had as a physician treating patients with various disorders who've received radiotherapy and developed hypopituitarism at a later date. I will say that the first time I encountered this particular problem was in my fellowship at Johns Hopkins in around 1990. It used to be the practice at that time to take patients who had a pituitary tumor, underwent surgery, and whether they had any residual tumor or not, we would give them radiotherapy just to try to diminish the likelihood of recurrence. And what we saw in patients, and I think a lot of studies bore this out, is that if you had residual tumor, you could stunt the growth of that 99% of the time. But over time, anywhere from half to 80% of patients, I think the average was around 2/3 of patients, would develop one or more partial or complete deficiencies of anterior pituitary hormones. So the recommendation was that patients be followed for life, but certainly for 10 years for the development of hypopituitarism after radiotherapy for pituitary adenomas. In that era, conventional radiotherapy was the most commonly applied radiotherapy treatment for patients with pituitary tumors. Since then, and probably taking hold at about that time, we've started to use gamma knife radiosurgery as well in patients with pituitary adenomas. Now, interestingly, gamma knife radiotherapy was initially thought not to likely cause hypopituitarism. And this is because conventional radiotherapy, the radiation dose fall-offs are pretty broad and over a large area of interest, so that you get radiation exposure to the pituitary stalk, the hypothalamus, surrounding tissues, etc., that might cause hypopituitarism, whereas Gamma Knife was supposed to be more site-directed or targeted therapy with very steep fall-offs in radiation dosage, so that it was believed that you would see practically no radiation-induced pituitary damage. But that's not the case. Most studies show some hypopituitarism over time in patients with Gamma Knife radiosurgery, and I would estimate that the average study shows about a 40 to 45% likelihood of developing one or more pituitary hormone deficiencies after Gamma Knife radiosurgery for pituitary adenoma. So before we talk about other tumors, let's talk about why the radiation-induced damage. The first thing is the pituitary gland itself is very radio-resistant, so it's not at all sensitive to radiation. And we think that most of the radiation damage that leads to hypopituitarism occurs in the hypothalamus, or maybe in the small blood vessels in the pituitary stalk. Maybe they get inflamed and thrombose form blood clots, then don't carry releasing factors from the brain to the pituitary, so the pituitary doesn't get any signal from the brain and stops making hormone in a regulated fashion. But whatever the case may be, it certainly seems to be that it's not necessarily radiation exposure to the pituitary gland itself that leads to this damage. I will tell you, however, that the more compromised the pituitary gland seems to be prior to radiotherapy, the more likely you'll have radiation-induced pituitary damage and hypopituitarism. So, for example, I like to tell patients that the pituitary has a lot of built-in reserves. So all the ACTH cells, the growth hormone cells, TSH cells, for example, are very numerous, and we have more of them than we need. And it's been estimated that we could probably survive on about 15% of our gland. So we've got a lot of extra cells in there, that reserve built in. And if you have a tumor, you've lost some of those reserve cells. If you have a tumor and then surgery, you've probably lost more of those reserve cells. If you've required two surgical procedures, or you've had a tumor, surgery, and a recurrence, you're chipping away at those reserve cells. And then when you throw radiation at the pituitary stalk in the hypothalamus, with that reserve already being depleted, you're more likely to end up with that deficiency state sooner rather than later, and also, as I said, more likely to have the hypopituitarism. So I see this clinically all the time, and it makes perfect sense. I haven't written a paper on it, but I see it fairly regularly, that the more likely a patient has diminished reserve, the more likely they're going to have hypopituitarism after radiotherapy. The important messages here are is that if you have a pituitary tumor and you have radiation therapy, you're not done. You need to see your doctor probably every 6 months for the first year or two to have pituitary function tests obtained, and then you probably should be tested annually for at least 10 to 15 years thereafter, just to allow for early diagnosis and treatment of any hormone deficiencies. And furthermore, if you develop any of the usually nonspecific symptoms and signs of hypopituitarism, you should seek medical attention and be tested between yearly checkups. So just keep that in mind as you go forward if you have a pituitary tumor and have received radiotherapy. Now, on to other tumors. So I see the same things in patients who have other tumors in the region of the cella or the paracellar structures, whether it be craniopharyngiomas, nasopharyngeal tumors, chordomas, for example. More importantly, I see it in patients with meningiomas as well. So if you have a cavernous sinus meningioma or a meningioma in the orbital apex or a meningioma at the sphenoid wing, where you're going to receive conventional or Gamma Knife radiotherapy that encompasses the cella, you're at risk to get hypopituitarism. I follow a great number of patients who have had radiotherapy for meningioma that put them at risk, and believe me, we see it. They'll be normal for 2, 3, 4 years, and then suddenly they start developing pituitary hormone deficits. Many of them develop just a couple of deficits, but occasional patients have panhypopituitarism as a consequence of radiotherapy. And it can happen, like I'd said earlier in the podcast, as long as 8 to 10 years after initial treatment. So these patients, too, need to be followed long term. I also believe that tumors that compromise the pituitary to begin with, or the pituitary stalk, are more likely to have radiation-induced hypopituitarism, and also to develop it sooner rather than later. And we see this, for example, in patients with cavernous sinus meningiomas, which is a tumor that can encroach the pituitary or sort of compress the pituitary gland in some situations. One of the things that I learned early in my fellowship training, and I didn't believe it at first. I was too skeptical, I guess, as a young physician, but that's probably the way you're supposed to be. But after now nearly 30 years of seeing patients with pituitary tumors, it's true. And that is the fact that patients do develop sort of pituitary hormone deficiencies in a hierarchical order. So that, you know, some hormones are lost before others. And this is probably related to not only the way the cells are dispersed within the pituitary gland, but also the number of cells and the degree of reserve that we have in our pituitary gland for certain functions of the gland as it relates to the cells that produce certain hormones. And I will tell you that I see patients with pituitary adenomas, and it seems to make sense, but the patients that I think really tell this story and speak to the truth of this hierarchical loss of pituitary hormones are those who have received radiotherapy. And the loss usually goes something like this. The first hormone deficiency state that we'll see is growth hormone deficiency. And that'll often be followed by hypogonadism in men or women. And then the next deficiency is TSH deficiency. And then the last one, if a patient develops it, would be cortisol deficiency. Time and time again, I see it. I didn't used to believe it, but I do now. And this makes some teleological sense, that the two most critical pituitary functions, that in regulating the thyroid to control our metabolism and regulating the adrenal glands to control our stress responses and a host of other things, are more so preserved than, say, growth hormone and gonadal function, both which require energy. You know, growth and development and maintenance of body composition, all that requires energy, and reproduction requires energy. So we lose those things first and preserve those more critical life-sustaining functions until later on. So that's a bit of a roadmap, if you will, of the hormone deficiencies you might develop and the order they will come in. So you can have that discussion with your physicians if you're being followed for the possibility of radiation-induced pituitary dysfunction. The other thing to keep in mind about all of this is that the symptoms and signs of these deficiencies are often nonspecific. And for example, people with growth hormone deficiency can have weakness, fatigue, diminished energy, weight gain, poor exercise capacity. You may see all the same symptoms and signs in hypothyroidism. So the evaluations are certainly important, but keeping in touch with your physician about your symptoms and signs for evaluations between annual visits is critical. The last thing I'll say about the hierarchical order is that it's not always followed. You know, I've certainly seen patients with ACTH deficiency before TSH deficiency, and other patients who have had growth hormone deficiency and thyroid deficiency, but no gonadal dysfunction. But in most patients, you'll see that order of loss of pituitary hormones is pretty characteristic of most patients who receive radiation. And lastly, those patients who've received two courses of radiotherapy, which is certainly plenty of people with craniopharyngiomas and and different meningiomas that may sort of escape the effects of radiotherapy and start to grow again, those patients are very likely to have hormone deficiency states after radiation. The same is true of pituitary tumor patients who require radiotherapy on more than one occasion. Requirement of having had multiple courses of radiotherapy puts you in a higher risk, higher proportion of development of hypopituitarism than those numbers I quoted earlier. I don't know the figures right offhand, but that's certainly my observation in my clinical practice. Again, this has been Dr. Lewis Blevins of Pituitary World News speaking with you about radiotherapy and hypopituitarism. I hope this information has been useful to you so that you can go forward and interface with your physicians and other healthcare providers to look after your health, to permit early diagnosis and treatment of hypopituitarism should you develop it after radiotherapy.